This is the Mantastic Experience. I am Mr. GP, your legal expert. As always, I'm joined by Professor G, your educational expert. We got C Squared, our financial expert. We have Miss Minga, our social emotional expert. And we have a special guest who's going to stay around for an interview. We have Sola the Legend. Thank you for joining us, Sola. And now, we're going to go to Professor G for a special word. What you got for us, Professor?
Well, we got some news from dating. Datepsychology.com have found that 45% of men age 18 to 25 have never asked a woman out on a date.
There's a lot of pressure on young men to step up. You know, are you going to pay for the meal? Do you have your own car? Like, what kind of job do you have? And so if your stuff is not tight, you may feel, not I want to say intimidated, that may be too strong, but you may feel that pressure to get everything straight, and then I'm going to start getting a little more aggressive on the relationship front. So those are my two thoughts.
No, definitely. A lot of people want to get themselves straight, and this is why a lot of people are waiting till later in life to get married and having kids, which is a whole other problem.
Exactly.
Which leads to, you know, fertility issues, but that's not today's show. We're going to back up to the 18 to 25 men who are not asking women out. And it's like you have to understand, you have two sides of the coin. So you'll have one side of the coin with the 18 to 25 who are not asking anybody out and who are staying in isolation, whether it's with video games or social media. But then you have the other side of the coin where you do have teens who are over-sexualized and who are having too much sex and who are buying the Plan Bs and so on and so forth. So that's a different conversation. But I think those who are isolating are outnumbering those who are oversexed at this point. Now, there's a happy medium where you don't want to be oversexed and you don't want to be isolated. You want to be in a strong relationship. But again, there's been so much promotion about toxic masculinity and how masculinity is a bad thing that so many young boys have fallen back from that and are afraid to let their masculine characteristics express themselves. And I want to give them the elements of those masculine characteristics so they have the confidence to ask a woman out on a date. And it's basic things. This is nothing. This is not magic that we're explaining when we say, hey, not just have a deeper voice, but speak with confidence. Be a little authoritative sometimes. Don't be indecisive. We are all indecisive sometimes. But you have to have these things in line to have the command and to be able to get the respect of a woman. So characteristics of masculinity are not bad. We need to stand tall.
All right, hold on. Minga, get in here because we need help. Help the professor.
Conception is that, like, even in the dating world, which I've been in, you guys are assuming that men are asking women to take them out on dates, which is not the truth. I can tell you right now, a lot of men are like saying, where do you live? What is your address? How about that?
It's not about
dating. It's
so
not
it's even, straight.
Dating is not a conversation.
Okay, well, I would say you might be looking in the wrong place because I have young bros who tell me the same thing, that women are just about money and they just want to get. And I'm still going to say, nah, you can't put one brush on everybody. So if you are in a space where everyone's kind of like, yo, let's have sex, I would say change your space and open your eyes for the prize.
So, Sola, do you have these terrible high-pitched brothers sounding like acapellas, just running up there?
But, do you feel the same way? Because there was, you know, listen. Professor G went on a whole diatribe. Do you agree with what he said?
No, I cannot. If the voice is not right,
there you go. There you go. There you go, Sola. High five me, Sola.
Boom.
I'm glad to hear that, Miss Sola, the legend.
I mean, you know, a sound wave is a frequency.
Yes.
You know, I need
the vibration.
Yes. I need that voice resonating at a masculine.
Yes.
Frequency. That's a big turnoff to me. And I noticed, you know, like I said, I haven't dated a lot, but I have been on these online dating platforms. And I noticed that a lot of these guys they don't even want to get on the phone.
Yeah.
They don't want to get on the phone. They don't want to do a FaceTime call. It's hard to set up a face-to-face meeting. They just want to continue to chat in the app. And like Minga said, it's one of the first, maybe like 6 months or so ago, the dude invited me to his house. I just met him. Yeah. We just met on Facebook dating. There was no date. There was no anything. He gave me his address, told me to bring an overnight bag. We never saw each other. I was like, bro, I was like, first of all, I'm not even coming to your house or getting in your car. I don't know you. You know? So, no, she's right. And there's no reason like to know me to approach me that way. So I don't even think it has anything to do, or I won't say anything, but it's not necessarily the space that you're in, because I find these men in church. I find them in business. I find them in corporate. I find them on the streets. They're the same. You know, they have an agenda. I don't think a lot of men and women too, are not even interested in a relationship right now. It's transactional. It's either for money, it's for sex. So for me, and I know that you're talking about chivalry and romance, right?
That's a fact.
But for me, I think when that enters into a relationship, it plays into those ideals that we project onto the relationship and creates false expectations for somebody to be what you want them to be. I think it's much better to build a friendship. I'd rather go Dutch when I go hang out with somebody.
I would never do that to you. I would never.
And listen, if I'm with a man and that's a big deal to him, I'm going to let him pay. I don't have a problem with it. But if you ask me, then we're going to go Dutch. And the reason that I do that is because for some men, once they pull out that wallet, like if his wallet is open, he expecting your legs to be open. So how about you keep your wallet closed, and I'm going to keep my legs closed. Let's do this.
I appreciate that you said that, because I think there's some women, Sola, that'll say, I don't care what his expectations are. I don't care if he just paid me $400 in order for me to get
all... Don't blow yourself up. Don't pay nobody.
Get myself all gussied up so we can go on this date. But they're just kind of like, hey, you know, that's on him. If he did it, it's on him. I don't owe him anything. And I appreciate what you said in terms of you don't want that sense of obligation or owing or any type of expectation. So let's just go Dutch. I give you a lot of like mad props for that.
If you have the warrior aspect, that'll cut a lot of other stuff in half. And what is the warrior aspect? I just want to go over that real quick. So we talked about you should have definitely an authoritative voice. And the next thing, exercise. Okay, you don't want to be too meager. You don't want to look like when it's time to eat, you're too eager. So this is why you need to get into the gym, or whether you go to the park and run and keep yourself in shape. And this will also help when you are out and about with your woman, she feels safe. I have, again, I'm a girl dad. I have my wife and my two daughters. I'm usually out. I'm the only dude in the group, you know. I need to, you know, have a certain authoritative stance and to project a certain type of vibration and energy that allows my family to be safe and lets other men around who might be thinking negative thoughts know that you have a gentleman in command here, a warrior who will take it the distance if you decide to disrespect. But I don't preach violence. I preach you being confident in yourself to avoid any kind of negative actions taking place. And this is what I'm talking about, the romantic warrior.
Professor G took a roundabout way to get there, but there is a point there.
I know what I'm talking about.
I think we're going to leave it here. I think we probably need to revisit this, as is dating a dead topic?
Because that's what it sounds like. Can you be a 300-pound warrior?
You can be whatever.
You can be a 300-pound warrior.
Hold on a second. Can I answer the question that was asked to me?
Guan, boy. Guan, brethren.
Yes, you can, because listen, just because a person's got size don't mean that size can't move in a violent way towards you if you come in the wrong way. So I've had to stand pat for my wife a few times. I've had to do it for other ladies in the past. Man's going to be a man. It really don't matter how much he weigh. So we're going to leave that there. Sola, the legend, thanks for joining us as our special guest.
Thank you for having me.
Today we got a very special guest. We have author, singer, radio host, model, Sola the legend, Welcome to the Mantastic Experience, Sola.
Mm. All right, all right.
Hey, how are you?
So tell us about yourself. How do you do all that? Like, that's a lot of different titles. How do you manage all that?
Yeah, you left a lot out too, but I ain't gonna say nothing about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get everything.
At least gotta mention that I'm a comedian. I do stand-up comedy too, but yes. Well, it's basically because I have multiple personalities, so you know they each juggle one of those different elements of me.
Okay.
Wait. So, well, we just dug right in because I'm sorry to cut in, but is that something you can control, or are we about to have an adventure here?
You know what? Listen. You really never know. It depends on what gets triggered. So we'll see.
Now, in your book, Suicidal Love, I believe, you talk about how depression can lead into a toxic relationship. Can you expound on that?
They really kind of feed off of each other. And so when you are suffering with a low or detrimental self-image, when you don't have a healthy self-image, you tend to seek external validation. So you want somebody else to give you an image of yourself that is better than the image you have. So we have a tendency to reach for what I call low-hanging fruit. We think that if we love somebody, that love is going to be reciprocated. And in that love being reciprocated, we will be validated. And so we reach for the people who are vibrating low enough for us to access them. But people like that are usually seeking attention. They're not interested in who you are. They're interested in their agenda for entertaining you. And so it may be easy to get into a relationship with people like that, that vibrate emotionally low. It's easy to get into a relationship with people like that. It's easy for them to accept your affection, to accept your attempts to love them, to accept your gifts and your services, because they're seeking that. But that is never going to result in reciprocal love, because they're only there for what they can use you for. So they're not trying to understand you, they're trying to use you. And what that ends up doing is it leads to a disappointing end to that relationship, where you now experience more pain, more rejection, more letdown. Your self-image is more damaged, it's more wounded. You're in worse shape than you were before you got into that relationship. And so you try to fix that with the next relationship.
I want to get into the meat of this, because you're saying you were giving all of yourself, but the relationships were failing.
Yes.
What was happening to make those relationships fail?
There is a disconnect. Okay, there are a couple of things. So let me back up. I think primarily it is the ideals that we project onto what we want to get out of a relationship. I would say that's the number one problem, because we have a tendency to go into a relationship thinking only of what we want to get out of it. And we serve in a relationship. I was giving my whole self, but I was giving it with an expectation of getting a particular response, because I believed that response was going to fulfill me and make me happy. Mm. So as soon as you give to get, you have already tainted the motive for giving.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
That's truth.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm giving my whole self with an ulterior motive. So I've already set myself up to fail.
That's
because I'm not giving from the right place. So I'm giving really good, but I'm not giving good, you know?
Gotcha.
And so that's number one. So now I'm projecting onto this relationship, hey, I'm doing all of this for you, so all I want you to do is just love me in return. That sounds so noble, right? I'm loving you, so love me back. But love loves, because that's the nature of love. Love never gives itself in expectation of anything, not even so much as a thank you. And what happens, so what the next thing that happens after that is it creates entitlement. So I gave all of this to you, so I am now entitled to the response that I am demanding.
Right.
Entitlement
demand.
Cancels out appreciation.
Yep.
You cannot be entitled and appreciative at the same time. They can never coexist. They are darkness and light. They cannot coexist. So as soon as I feel entitled to a certain response, a certain behavior, this whole relationship now becomes transactional. That's not unconditional love. This is now transactional love. I'm going to do for you, and I'm expecting this in return. And since I'm entitled to what I'm entitled to what I'm expecting, if you don't meet that expectation, I'm now going to punish you.
I have two questions. One is, as you went back out after that healing into the dating landscape and encountered people that maybe were in need of some self-introspection of their own, do you just back away slowly? Do you step in and try to help? Like, what is that dating landscape when you're meeting with people that need some healing of themselves on their own side?
So I don't have a lot of experience with dating. I haven't dated much at all, kind of just venturing into that. But one of the things that I'm really noticing is that the whole perspective and mindset behind dating tends to be very selfish. People don't see you. And with me particularly, I can tell you a handful of experiences that I've had with me particularly, because I'm an attractive woman and I come to the table checking a lot of boxes. You know, I'm secure, my kids are older, I'm fun, whatever, you know, whatever it is that a guy is looking for. I said, oh my gosh, you know, she checks all of these boxes. As soon as I check those basic boxes, he is no longer interested in getting to know me. He is only interested in where I'm going to fit in his agenda. And I noticed this happening over and over again, like, wow, she's pretty, so I want her here. And I notice a lot of times that with men, and this happens with women too, you know, I'm dealing with men, but it goes both ways. They don't hear me anymore. Mm-hmm. As soon as they qualify me, you know, they've qualified me now as wife material or long-term material or whatever. They're no longer listening to get to know me. They are trying to secure me in this box that they have created for me.
I just don't know why she's single. I don't know why she's single. That's it.
Hold on. Did she say she's single?
I don't know why she's single.
She says she's not dating, but we assume you're assuming she's single.
I'm separated, actually. I've been separated from my husband for some years now.
Yeah, one of the concepts that I saw in your book on How to Love a Black Man, it said respect him.
Yes.
Can you expound on that?
Ooh, what? Not in this broadcast. I wrote, actually.
Wow.
Wow.
Now I'm curious.
now, the reason that I say that is because... respect to a man is very simple, right? You guys, you're real straight line. It's very logical. It's just respect me. A lot of times men don't even know how to explain what that means to them. Not always, but men don't even know how to articulate to women sometimes what that looks like. So what I've done in my book, How to Love a Black Man, in that book, there are 100, and that's why I said I can't get it. I can't break it down on this podcast, but there are 100 key insights on how to respect a man. And I break it down step by step, what that actually looks like in practical daily application. So all the time it's said to women, you got to respect a man. And you do, because if a man doesn't feel respected, nothing else that you do for him is going to matter.
If you're somebody who has zero experience as a partner, as a woman partner in this scenario, mm-hmm. You don't really have a lot of experience, but you know, you have some good logic or what have you. But then when you give advice, you position it as, this is what you need to do. I think this makes all the sense in the world. You should have been done this 3 months ago. It's not going to be received very well, because you're not coming from a standpoint of demonstrating that you have a level of expertise in what you're advising on. So I think that that's where you may get that pushback that you were describing, that kind of where they're just not open to receiving that message.
I'm
right.
This is really important information. Loving it.
I mean, listen, this is if we talk about food for the soul, this was a 40-ounce porterhouse just served on a platter. Like this, we got deep, but we could go deeper. But I'm afraid we're out of time right now.
We got to bring her back. We definitely got to bring her back.
She needs to come back.
Sola the Legend, please tell the Mantastic Experience audience where we can find you.
Let's plug the book.
Plug the book. Plug all your socials. What you got?
Yeah, so this is my book, How to Love a Black Man. You can get it from my website. My website's real simple. It's solah.me, SOULAH.ME, solah.me. And you can get to all of my socials from there. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I'm on Amazon. I do private sessions. So if you want a personal insight session for yourself or your relationship, I'm available for that. And then all of my books are on my website as well.
Miss Minga, you got something for the people?
Professor G, Mr. GP, NC Squared, in addition to the guests that you've had on the show, I feel that a commonality is the fact that they were men and they were happy to say that they were married. And and to me, I'm like, this is wonderful. I'm like sharing this with my girlfriends. And it's wonderful to see Black men that are happy to be married. And this is not promoted right now, you know, in society. And so this is why I felt like I wanted to just talk about what is a good man? What does it mean to be a good man? What are the attributes of a good man?
Just starting with you, what is a good man to you? What's your perception of a good man?
You know what? That is such an excellent question. I think a good man is one who is present. In every aspect. So let's say if I needed to go to the gym, let's go. What are we eating for today? No preparation. Let's go. What are the kids doing? Let's go. And a man that I can build with.
Do you think there's a difference between a good man and a man that's good for you?
I see what you did there. I gotta process.
say it again, Sola.
Do you think there's a difference between a good man and a man who is good for you?
Yes, I think so.
It's a great question.
Yeah, I think so. You could be a good man, and I'm not, and it may not be my type, and vice versa.
Yeah, because if you flip it, the other side of the coin, because we know there's always two spaces, right? You got the negative and the positive. So if you look at one side of the coin, you might have the definition of what a good woman should be, but that might not be the woman for you. Okay, so yeah, I think it's more important to find the person for you. So I was asked the question a long time ago, do you want the person you love the most or a person who really loves you? Now the ideal answer would be both. However, you've got to see where it's leaning. And if it's leaning towards, hey, that person really loves me, I think that's a great start, because there are people in relationships and I can clearly see that this person's not as into you as you are into them.
Being a man, what were the experience, what were the models that you have? You guys are good men, in my opinion. So what models did you have as a child growing up?
I think... If I could take that, I think there's many different examples of what a good man can be. I think some of the base ideas of a good man is to be able to stand firm on your own two feet, and that can come in many different ways. We're talking about financially. Most you want a man that can stand on his feet. You want a man just on if I tell you something. You can take me at my word because I tell you that. That's something I really pride myself on. I'm not just going to tell you something just to make you hear it. You know, so I think there's that builds a level of trust and security that I think that's lets my wife live a comfortable life. And anyone I've dealt with, they've had a comfort with me just on that, knowing that this is a truthful, honest person I'm dealing with. So I'm sure that the other two can add to that.
Yeah, let me get in there, because you asked what kind of models or examples we had when we were coming up as far as good men. And I can definitely say a lot of the examples or models I had of men around me as I was growing up were absolutely horrible. They were atrocious. And I could definitely start with, I hate to say it, my dad. I love my dad. Good man. But we had a sprinkle terrible. Of domestic violence going on in the house.
Terrible husband.
Yeah. I would say good dad, terrible husband. That's a good way to say it. And definitely you need both for a functional relationship. And I'll be honest with you, When my mom and dad finally got divorced, my mom had enough of the violence and she left, you know, as she should have. You know, my dad was very bitter. So he was constantly feeding into me as a young man. Women ain't nothing. Don't trust them. They're no good. And I'm just sitting there absorbing this like, okay, dad, all right. And it had an effect on me. However, my wife and I, we met very young. We got married at 19. And how did we get married with me being fed all this negative energy? Because she provided support. I felt peace when I was with her. And
this that's nice, man. That's so important, bro.
This is what a lot of women overlook. So you can support a dude, but if you supporting him with rang, 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 drive a dude crazy. Right. Mm-hmm. So my wife, what she bought was peace into the chaos in my life. So even when I had gangsters, older dudes telling me, you got to roll like this to be a man, which definitely was not the way. When I was with my wife, she wasn't talking about this. She was talking about peace.
So my experience was different. My biggest role model for being a man was my father. He was present. He was in the house. And really a bigger than life figure, right? And so now I'm not saying he was perfect. But I think he was a man. Like, he was intentional. He was, you know, widely spoken. He had strong opinions. And it was a good role model. But I added to that role model because I also spent some time in the military. And in the military, there's order, there's chain of command. And you have to kind of defer to your leadership. And a lot of my leaders when I was in the military were men. And so you get a sense of, and I probably saw a more, you know, along the lines of Professor G, a little bit more masculine, a little bit more muscular kind of sense of this is what it means to be a man while I was in the military. And then, you know, to be fair, I think I watched a little bit, enough TV to have gotten some images off TV of what it means to be a man, you know? I used to watch the show way back in the day. Like even Little House on the Prairie, which used to be run some reruns way back in the day with Michael Landon. I was like, man, that dude looks cool. And he was always fair and made the right decisions. And so I kind of tucked that away. I think at the end of the day, you kind of start to shape what is really important and what kind of impact you want to have on your relationships around you and on your children in particular, as you become a father. And the more thoughtful you are around that, hopefully, the more you make really better decisions growing up. So, but that's kind of my background.
So I wanted to jump into something because it was a conversation that me and C-Square started getting to a few weeks back where we're talking about nice guys and nice guys finishing last. And we really didn't get into it too deep because we were talking about a different topic at the time. Now, I'm a nice guy. Me and the professor, we're talking about the same dad. So we kind of have different approaches.
My brother from the same mother.
Same mothers too. Yeah, we got that. So just to understand, like, one of the things was when you see domestic violence as a kid, a lot of times you either become that or you become the exact opposite. I became the exact opposite. So I treat women really nice, really delicately. I bring no violence to the table whatsoever. A lot of women look at that as weakness.
Yeah.
When I was younger and I'm dating, again, I'm a nice guy. I've always been laid back. That's who I am. We go to role models, you see the t-shirt, Captain America, Spider-Man. Yeah, these guys gave us moral lessons as kids when we read comic books. And this is how you did certain things. Those things do matter. In the 90s, people looked at you as a nerd. That wasn't cool. It was just like, all right, so then now you're treating them nicely. They weren't interested in that. They wanted the thug dude. They wanted the hard guy. And I've had women tell me this. When I'm ready to settle down, you're the guy I want to settle down with. And I'm just standing there. And as I told C-Square in that episode, always nice guy, never stupid guy. So after you go sleep around with 50 and Wu-Tang and all these people, you're supposed to come back to me and I'm supposed to take your used ass. And no, we're not doing that.
Too many miles.
Too many miles now, because we could have did the right thing from here. So a lot of women, I think, that are having those troubles is they're passing over good men when the opportunity is there to go for something that's a little bit more risky or something they think should
be why
what a man is, and then they kind of have to get burnt by that fire, and then they want to come back to the accountant the computer guy, the nice
Right.
guy who they didn't think could burn them.
Nerds
And
rule the
sometimes
world.
it's too late by that point. You got to make a
Yeah.
good decision when the good decision's in front of you.
And so sometimes we see those men, we talk about a good man, but Professor G says something so powerful about his wife. She brought the good out of the man. And so we have the ability as women to speak to the king in a man and develop that, because every man has him in him a king and a fool. And if you know how to speak to the king in a man, you can bring that king out of the man. But if the man doesn't have a standard base of masculinity, you really don't have anything to work with. And I think that's the attraction sometimes to those men. We want to be the one to develop the good in them, but sometimes we don't know how to do that.
And I want to say, there is no one formula. Life is a roll of dice. We have to start accepting it. And you gotta commend yourself just for getting out there and rolling the dice. Cause I could definitely say in my situation, it could have went either way. Cause I was in such a negative space, especially during my teenage years, a lot of violence going on, depression. And it could have went either way. And I just kind of hooked onto my wife and the positive energy that she had. But that won't always be the end result for everyone. And people
Right.
need to understand that. And it's a roll of the dice. And I'll tell you, at 19, at the time she was my girlfriend, my wife came and told me, she was pregnant. I wasn't that surprised because it was going down. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, check this out, beautiful. Feel me. I said, check this out, beautiful. I got this fly basement apartment that I'm wrapping up. I want you to come down there and make it a home with me, and we're just gonna take care of this baby. And my wife said something very significant. She said, No. For me to come, you gotta marry me first. And I think the average 19-year-old would be like, FOH, that's not happening. But this is the part about being a romantic warrior. One element, you gotta have future vision. Almost like Nostradamus, you got to be able to see the future. So when my wife at the time, girlfriend, said, "You got to marry me for me to come into your fabulous basement apartment with one room and a little crappy shower stall," I said, "Damn, this is a lot of pressure." But I thought about what all the other women who I knew at that time were doing, and they were getting around like a Uber. And I was like, "I don't want, like the other dude said, to be the last stop on your Uber ride." I looked at my wife and I said, she brings me peace. She is saying, let's get married. I don't know if it's gonna work out, but I rolled the dice. Bang, rolled him. Another element of the romantic warrior. You gotta take chances. We all get afraid. I can't just say no fear because I was nervous. But through the ups and downs, it worked out. And I will tell you that. Men and women, you got to start young, because the good ones get snatched up pretty young.
Agreed. Yes,
Yeah,
sir.
if you're not trying to snatch something in high school, college, it only gets harder as you get older, but it's not impossible because I have seen great relationships develop later. But I'm glad I snatched up mine.
I guess the legend and I are screwed.
Say it
All right,
again?
don't try
No,
to take my
no,
hope
no.
away.
I
Don't
just
take
said you're
my
not
hope
screwed. You're
away.
not screwed. Nah,
Bully, that
nobody's
fast. She
screwed.
said, "Don't you
Nobody's
dare speak
screwed.
that over me."
There's a
Right, I'm
lot
about
of
to live my best life.
Yes, absolutely.
Listen. I'm sure once this goes up, you're gonna see in the comments, it's gonna be a bunch of good men coming out like, "Oh, we right here. You just got
That's
to
right.
hit
I'm
us up."
loving
But we're
this,
gonna
bro.
leave this conversation right here.
Yeah.
We got our financial expert C Squared, who's about to come and help us get our finances right. C Squared, help the people.
All right, let's get right into it. Today, I really want to talk more about how we close the wealth gap in our community and just in general, help everybody think about building wealth, every listener. And one of the first pillars you got to think about when you're building wealth is home ownership. Because with home ownership, you're living there, you're paying towards that property that you live in. You own it, so it's not rent, it's now a mortgage, let's say, if you borrowed money to do it. And as you own that piece of real estate, that home you live in, you're paying down the mortgage every single month. And hopefully, you're in a part of the country
where the value of that property you live in is increasing in value. It's an asset and it goes up in value. And then that difference between what you owe and what the property is worth becomes a really significant portion of your net worth. And that's how we build wealth. And so down the road, you may pay the mortgage down to zero. You may leave the home to your children, but now you've passed on a really significant amount of money to the next generation. And if you sell the house while you're living, then you can carry that wealth going forward. So let's dig into it. So with that, one of the first things you got to think about is your credit score. When you go to a mortgage company and you're talking to them about, hey, I'd like to maybe take out a mortgage. I'm looking for a house. Can I get pre-qualified? Things of that nature. The first thing they want to know is, where's your credit? Because that lets them know how they're going to price the loan. It lets them know if you're going to be in a range where they're even going to want to price the loan, or if they're just going to tell you to go somewhere else or get yourself straight. So I would tell you that as long as you're over 700, you're considered a good borrower. If you're over 740, you're considered excellent. And the highest score is 850. It takes a pattern of behavior in borrowing money, borrowing and paying it off, borrowing and paying steadily to get that credit score up there. And as long as you don't have any huge problems with your credit, such as a foreclosure, a write-off, maybe you had like an express department store type credit card, you borrowed $700 to get a new, you know, to get a whole new outfit range for your school year or whatever the case may be, and you never paid it off. And then they have to write it off. That's going to damage your credit. And it will sit there on your credit, holding you back for at least 7 years.
Your credit score is at 650 or so. Like, how does that affect the housing loans?
650, you can get something. Here's how it's going to affect you. The bank is going to want to, if they choose to lend to you, they're going to want to charge you more because your credit history is not as strong. And so they're taking on more risk by giving you the mortgage. So right now, you know, there may be, you know, let's say mortgages are 7% on average across the country. They may want to charge you 7.5% because they want to make their money while the making's good. Because if you end up going bad on that mortgage, they want to at least be able to say that they made their money. So that's kind of how they think about it. It's kind of crazy because the person who needs the money the most is usually the person who struggled with their finances, doesn't have as great credit, but you're going to have to pay the most money in order to borrow that money. Going forward, you're going to have to pay the most interest in order to borrow that money. So if you have great credit, if you have strong credit, if you're building it up, getting north of 700, you're now like a really strong candidate. You should feel really good about your position. So the first step is credit. Go ahead, Minga.
So Mr. C-Square, I do have good credit, and I don't feel strongly about the home buying process. and I do have excellent credit in a great career. I think the issue is having that down payment.
Right. Yeah. So look, down payment depends on where you live, right? Depending on where you are in the country, houses, you know, can range in cost, right? You know, if you're in the New York City area, Long Island, Brooklyn, New York, etc., you know, northern New Jersey, housing is really expensive. And so that down payment is an even bigger figure. Here's something you got to know. The FHA, which is short for Fair Housing Authority, FHA offers some benefits where instead of putting what a lender would normally say is 20% down, so if you're buying a $500,000 house, which is average in the tri-state area where we are, $500,000 house, 20% is $100,000, right? So you may have $100,000 to put down in the house, you may not. But what the FHA says is, if you're a first-time buyer, which they consider a first-time buyer, meaning you have not bought something within the last 5 years, so even if you have bought one 7, 8, 10 years ago and you no longer live there, you're considered a first-time home buyer if you haven't bought in 5 years. And then you can qualify for what's called an FHA loan. FHA loan has some stipulations you've got to meet, minimum credit score, things of that nature, you know, that you got to meet as far as criteria. But if you meet them, and they're not it's not a heavy hurdle, except for that credit score metric, then instead of putting 20% down, it's 3% down. So if you're buying a $500,000 house, instead of putting $100,000 down, you're putting $15,000 down. $15,000 is still a lot of money,
but it's easier to save for $15,000 than it is to save for $100,000 down payment. So that's one thing you should know. The other thing you should know is there's a lot of lenders out there. And I don't necessarily want to call any of them in particular out, but some of the big name lenders that are out there have a very focused effort on expanding home ownership in response to the call from lawmakers, you know, presidents, people who've said this is important to the success of this country. And so they've asked lenders to be a little, to figure out ways to be a little more accommodating to people who have less money to put down so they can get them into a home sooner. Because here's the deal. Whether you're renting or you're paying down a mortgage, it's going to be about the same amount of money. If your family needs a 3 or 4 bedroom house, whether you rent that 3 or 4 bedroom house or you're paying a mortgage towards that 3 or 4 bedroom house, the difference in cost, it may even be cheaper to do a mortgage.
Let's see. Let me understand what you're saying here. So you're talking about generational wealth.
Yep.
How to have money over, you know, several generations. So buying a house, real estate, I've always heard is one of them as you're talking about. So you're saying the three things we need. So you said we need good credit score of 750. We could do 700, 700 or better. Mm-hmm. Then you're saying we need some a down payment. So the down payment is anywhere from 15,000 to probably 100,000, depending on what kind of government deal we can get.
Right.
What about your salary, your income, like your job? How important is that a factor in
play? Yeah, no, it's a huge component to how you qualify, right? Because look, at the end of the day, the lender wants to make sure you can pay back the loan. It's just that simple. If I'm lending my friend who says, hey, I need $500, I can either decide in my head, I'm going to give you $500 and I'm not going to ask for it again, or I'm going to say, well, you know, when do you think you're going to pay it back?
I'm going to come from the pro renters perspective. All right.
Okay.
So the pro renter is going to tell you, okay, if I pay the same rent as a mortgage, if a pipe bursts, I call the landlord mm-hmm. calls a super comes fix it. If it snows, the super goes and shovels the block.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to make a phone call. I don't got to worry about none of that. If you're in a house, you got to pay the maintenance. You got to pay for that pipe. Pause. You got to do all of that.
You pay for pipes, bro?
No, I didn't. You see, I ain't messing with you, professor. So, what's the counter to the pro renters?
Look, man, this is so easy for me, man. I'm telling you, it's night and day. So let's go back to that scenario: $500,000 house, mortgage. Let's call it $3,500. Keep it easy. $500,000 house, $3,500 mortgage. Every single month, $1,000 out of that $3,500 goes to pay down the mortgage. So you start off owing $485,000 because you put $15,000 down through an FHA loan. Okay. After 12 months, you have paid down the mortgage by $12,000. So now instead of owing $485,000, you actually owe $473,000. Okay. And you've been living in your home. And yes, if you had to repair a pipe, or if you had to, you know, get the bushes trimmed or throw up a new fence, something tells me whatever you had to pay out was less than $12,000 that you just paid down your mortgage that year.
Mm-hmm. So important. But for the sake of time,
we're gonna wrap it up here. All I'm gonna say is to that bank, you know who you are. The FOH department said they'd call me on Tuesday. It's been 4 months. So we're just going to leave that right there. This has been a fantastic experience.
Give them our addresses.
Oh, bills. Yes, we have them. There are addresses.
You can find us at BK Made TV.
Can you just pause? Like, how are you just doing?
You look like you didn't know what to say, so I'm trying to say. You didn't look like you knew the addresses. I was going to pump it out there. If you know the addresses, shoot it, okay? Because I shot it. You know the address? Go ahead, bro. Go ahead, bro. Go ahead, bro. I thought I was saving you. Go ahead.
At the Mantastic Experience on TikTok. You can find us at the Man EXP at the Mantastic EXP on Twitter, sure, or X, as you want to call it. At the Man EXP on IG. You can email us at the Mantastic Experience at gmail.com.
And you can also find this on BK Made TV, our production company. Just BK Made TV, and you'll see our stuff.